an absolute delight for me to introduce today's IAM Distinguished Colloquial Speaker, who is Professor David Gottlieb from Brown University. David did his BSc, MSc, and PhD all at Tel Aviv University. In fact, he was one of the first PhDs from Tel Aviv. You might say that dates him, but they only started in the modern era. He then became an instructor at MIT for 3 years, went off to NASA Langley as a senior scientist, and then back at Tel Aviv as an assistant professor. He stayed there as a professor for 9 years, and then moved to Brown University, where he's been there for 16 years. I think for many of you, you know David Gottlieb as probably the world's expert on spectral methods, and I'm absolutely delighted that he took the time to come and to talk to us about spectral methods for this continuous model.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bernie, for inviting me here. I met old friends and some new people that I hope to call them friends, and very intriguing subjects and so on. I have here too many transparencies, and I won't cover everything, so don't be afraid of that. But I'll try to give you more a review on the subject than a detailed explanation of that. So I would like to, the subject is spectral method for discontinuous problem. I have to acknowledge my longtime collaborator, Wei San Dan, that did absolutely gorgeous work in simulating, in many simulations. Let me give you the plan of this talk, but I'm afraid I won't cover all the areas. First of all, for those people that don't know anything about spectral methods, I'll give one slide or two what are the spectral Galerkin and collocation schemes. I'm afraid that it won't be enough, but maybe it will give you the flavor. Then I'll review some approximation theory and we'll get fast to the main problem. Why are there problems in applying spectral methods to discontinuous problems? And it traces back to the Gibbs phenomena, to the Gibbs phenomenon, and we'll see what the Gibbs phenomenon implies. I'll talk very shortly about the resolution, how you overcome the Gibbs phenomena, and I'll talk about two applications here. The first one is application that was given to me by the U.S. Air Force about splicing of pictures. The other one has to do with computer tomography, and we found the Gibbs phenomena there also. After I did this work on the Gibbs phenomena, I see the Gibbs phenomena in everything that I look at. So, okay, I'll cover then a little bit about linear hyperbolic equations with discontinuous solutions. And I'll talk a little bit about the stability, but then the main result here will be that though the solution is discontinuous, one can recover a solution with spectral accuracy. And the theory for that is complete. There is some theory for the nonlinear hyperbolic equations. Basically, this is led by Eitan Tadmor of Tel Aviv and UCLA. And I'll review a little bit. I wanted to spend more time on that, but I don't think I'll have time. He showed basically the spectral method with the right viscosity converged to the right to the entropy solution. Okay, and then we'll go about the applications. And I want to show four different applications of problems that contain shock waves. One is the LeBlanc problem. The other one is interaction of shock waves and hydrogen jets in reactive flows. So this is a complicated phenomena. I'll talk about recessed cavity flame holders for supersonic flows. And then I'll talk about the Riemann mesh of instabilities in supersonic flows. So this is a big program, and I hope that I'll be able to cover some of them. Actually, the point that I would like to make is the following. Even if you have discontinuous solutions, you can recover high order accuracy from spectral calculations. Now, if you just have a very simple solution, which is just a step function or just a pure shock wave, you do not need spectral method for that, and you should not use spectral method for that. However, if you have a shock wave plus very complicated phenomenon, like the reactive flow and the interaction of shock waves and jets or cavities and so on, in this case, it will be beneficial to use spectral methods and to recover the high accuracy in smooth parts of the flow. Okay. Let's introduce a spectral method. It's very naive, and I don't expect you to write a spectral code based on that. But just to present the thing. Okay. In spectral method, we approximate a solution of equation by as a member of a space, Bn, finite dimensional space of order n, that has a phi k, smooth basis functions. And right now in the applications, there are currently three phi k that are most commonly used. For periodic problems, you use the Fourier series. For non-periodic problems in finite intervals, you use either the Chebyshev polynomials or the Legendre polynomials. That's not completely true. There is a lot of interest nowadays in choosing different eigenfunctions such that you can gain. I have to mention the Prolet spheroidal functions that seems to be performing better than the Chebyshev or Legendre. And there is a work that done here at UBC about other basis functions that are tailored to the problem that you want to solve. But still, the most commonly used spectral methods are based on these three. How do you construct a spectral approximation? Okay, the approximation is obtained in one of the two ways. If you have a function, capital F of X, the spectral approximation, the Galerkin projection, is given by the finite sum, k goes from 0 to n. Here you have the scalar product F against phi k times phi k of X. And the scalar product is just the integral of F against phi k with the proper weight function. For Fourier and Legendre is 1, for Chebyshev it's ugly. But that's what you have. Now, this is Galerkin procedure, but it's being used less and less. People are using much more the collocation or the pseudo-spectral. And in the pseudo-spectral, you approximate f of x by the pseudo-spectral projection operator in of f. And now, instead of the scalar product, you have the f dot phi k sub n. So this is not the integral, but the sum. And the sum is, and this is very important, the xi are the Gauss-Lobato quadrature nodes, and the wi, or omega I, are the weight of the quadrature nodes. So the integral of f omega dx is the sum. This sum is exact for any polynomial of degree 2n minus 1. And we make a lot of use of this when we prove things. Now, this way of... maybe I'll put it here. This suggests a very natural way, an easy way to apply the spectral method. And this is, if you substitute now from the second equation, you substitute FKN here back and you change the summation part, you get that IN of F equals to the sum F of XJ times GJ of X. Now GJ of X is a polynomial of degree N, and GI of XK is delta IK. So this is basically the Lagrange polynomials. And what does a spectral method is just that the Xi are the Gauss-Lobato points, either for the Fourier or for the Legendre or for the Chebyshev. Once you have this representation, it's very natural to differentiate it. So if you differentiate it, you get the sum Fxi times Gi prime, and if you read it at the points Xk, you get elements of a matrix multiplying your original vector, F of Xi. So this is the differentiation matrix. If you have a function given at the Gauss-Lobato points Xi, you multiply it by these elements of the matrix, you multiply it by D, and you get the derivative of the interpolation polynomial. That are basically the spectral methods. There is a software at Brown University, if you go to the webpage of Wei San Dan, called Pseudopec, and you can download it, it's free, and you have there all the differentiations, all the possible differentiations, with all the developments over the very simple-minded way that I presented here. There are many tricks and all kind of improvements, and one can use it in writing the spectral code. Why spectral methods are so powerful? They are so powerful because of the approximation results. The norm F minus Pn of F, F minus the approximation, either Galerkin or collocation, goes to zero very fast. You have your n to the power s, and the s, the power, is limited only by the smoothness of the function. Here you have the Sobolev s norm, meaning the norm of the function and its first s derivatives. If the function is very smooth, s is very large, and the approximation is very good. In particular, if the function is analytic, the approximation is, the convergence is exponential. So this is fantastic order of approximation. If you have smooth function, you see that very often, which means that you don't need n very big in order to get good results. Alternatively, if you are limited by resources of computer and you can fit there only n points in each direction, this kind of method will resolve more phenomena than anything else if the function is smooth. And this is not secret, the spectral method were so successful basically in turbulence studies. In turbulence flow, you don't have in incompressible flows, you don't have shock waves. The solution is very smooth, but it has many scales. So this is exactly the type of problems that you want to use as spectral methods. However, this approximation result point the problem or the difficulty that we have to when we apply spectral method to discontinuous functions. Namely, for a discontinuous function, there is not even a first derivative here. Now, in physics and in many applications, we very often face situations that the function is piecewise smooth. Like you have a function that has a shock wave, but otherwise it's smooth. So you have a jump in the pressure, but the pressure is smooth otherwise. I'll bring you some other cases, but the other main case is that you want to use Fourier method, you want to use Fourier coefficients, and your problem is not periodic. So it seems that you lose all the accuracy. So here is the problem. This is called actually the Gibbs phenomena, and this is a story that I told many times, so I'll tell it very shortly, but it's a charming story. Who discovered the Gibbs phenomena? It's not Gibbs. Turns out that it's Albert Michelson. Albert Michelson, he was the first American to get the Nobel Prize. His hobby was to build a very accurate equipment. And in 1898, Albert Michelson built a harmonic analyzer. It's a mechanical device that you would draw a graph and the device will give you back the Fourier coefficients of that. So in a paper in 1898 in the Philosophical Magazine, he showed that he showed some results that he gets Fourier coefficients, and then he synthesized the function again. And you have some cases, for example, this function. This is a copy from the original paper. So this is the function that he tried to recover. If you don't have enough modes, you get this one. If you have enough modes, you get that. That looks good. However, he showed also another graph, and he did not comment on that. And this is if you have a square wave. This is the function that he wants to synthesize. There are four ways to put it, and so I have four iterations. Okay. This is the function. And you start with a small number of Fourier modes, you get that. And if you have enough Fourier modes, you get these things. And you see that you have oscillations all over. And indeed, if you expand the Heaviside function, say by the Legendre functions, but you'll have the same thing with the Fourier. I don't want to bother to... It doesn't matter. But this is the approximation of the Legendre. And you see here different things. You see here that the convergence is very slow. This is when you increase the number of points. But moreover, you have for each one, you have a peak. And the peak moves into here. So he did not comment anything about that. Let me just put it here. There must be more than four ways. Okay. 6 months after that, there is a letter in the journal Nature by Albert Michelson. This letter is here. And it's signed Albert Michelson.
This is from
a different thing. From Michelson, I showed you this. But why do I keep it here in a moment? So Michelson takes basically reports on something strange that he saw. And by the way, I just want to mention one thing that it's very nice. 1898, he sent the paper in September 6th. It appeared in October 6th, the same year. And you have to take into account that 3 weeks for the travel from... This is a British journal, Nature. So it takes some time. What he did was the following. He said, I don't understand why mathematicians talk about convergence. There is no convergence. Take this thing and look at these points, at these peaks. Take the limit now as x goes to 0 and n goes to infinity, and you do not converge to 1, you converge to something else. Well, so this is actually the Gibbs phenomena. I'm not telling the whole story. There is a continuation to this story. Mathematicians really wrote very angry letters about Michelson. One of them suggested to him to read a book in mathematics, and it explained to him that convergence means that you hold the point here and you look if it's converging or not. Formally, the mathematicians were right. Of course, Michelson had the point, the right point. You have the right point that you never really converge and the maximum norm. You have really here a constant overshoot of 8%. Gibbs came to the picture much later, and he analyzed this phenomena. His first paper was wrong. The second time he got it right. So I don't know why it is called after his name. Okay, so I would like now to discuss whether the Gibbs phenomena is means that you cannot use a spectral method for discontinuous functions, or maybe you can. And I would like to depart from the point of view of Michelson itself. The game is that I'm given Fourier coefficients, or Legendre coefficients, or Chebyshev coefficients of the function. Can I construct from these coefficients a better approximation? And the answer is, under some circumstances, yes. Okay, so I have a function. Now it will be some mathematics. We assume that I have a function in L2 minus 1, 1. It's L2, it can be piecewise smooth. However, I have a sub-interval, AB, in which fx is analytic. So the function itself is not analytic. The missing derivatives in some places. But in a sub-interval, AB, the function is analytic. Now, I'm talking about orthonormal family psi k of x, which can be the Fourier, the Chebyshev, the Legendre, or whatever you want. We have a scalar product, and I do have f sub n. And f sub n is the, say, Galerkin approximation based on psi k, based on the Chebyshev, on Legendre, on the Fourier. All I demand is that the limit of fx minus fn of x will be zero. Fn will converge to fx almost everywhere. And if I have a piecewise function, it does converge almost everywhere. So this is the game that I have. I'm given a function fx, I'm giving a f sub n of x, which is the Galerkin approximation based on this orthonormal family, and I know that it does not converge fast. And the question, can I do something with this fn, so at least it will converge fast in the interval AB, in the sub-interval AB. So let me define, just for convenience, I'll denote by psi this function of x. So if x goes from A to B, psi goes from minus 1 to 1. So this is the local variable of the interval AB. Now, a two-parameter family phi k lambda is called Gibbs complementary to the family psi k if three demands are satisfied. And basically, I'm going to show that if there is a Gibbs complementary to psi, then I can recover spectral accuracy in AB. That will be the theorem that I'll get to that. I would like to, before I go over these three conditions, I would like to mention that this family has two indices, k and lambda. And this is very much like wavelets. In wavelets, you have also two parameters that actually specify a family. I need also two parameters. I cannot do that with one parameter. I need two parameters. Okay, I want phi k to be orthogonal or orthonormal on the interval AB, or psi goes from minus 1 to 1. It can be a different scalar product. So I denote this scalar product by lambda. I want it to converge exponentially. I want that if g of psi in AB, if a function is analytic, so then if I expand it in the basis, phi k lambda, and I cut it, k goes from 0 to lambda, it will converge exponentially fast in lambda. So these two are just technical ones, but the third one is important. I need some relationship between the phi and the psi. And the relationship is the following. If I take large k and small l and lambda, the scalar product of phi against psi at the interval AB times the maximum of phi will be less than alpha n over k to the power lambda for any k which is bigger than n. So basically it's going to say Condition B implies that if you approximate G, any analytic function in this basis, you have exponential convergence. C implies that the projection of large of psi k, the large k, on small phi k, phi l lambda, is exponentially small. Why it is exponential? You have n over k, k is bigger than n, and lambda is some fraction of n. If you have this, given psi, if you have that, then you can state the following theorem. That says the following. Suppose fx is L2 in minus 1, 1, and analytic in the subinterval. Suppose you are giving psi k of x, this is my original series, the Fourier or the Legendre or the Chebyshev. Suppose there is a Gibbs complementary to psi k. Then if you approximate fx by the you expand now fn in terms of the phi. Remember, you don't have f. You do have f sub n. And f sub n does not converge good to fx. The convergence is very bad. It's almost everywhere, and the rate is very small. Still, if you expand fn in terms of the new basis, phi k lambda, and you go from 0 to lambda, you have exponential convergence. So if you can find for the function, for the original expansion, and if you can find the Gibbs complementary to this function, then you can resolve, then you can recover the spectral accuracy. Fn is a lousy approximation to f. You don't know f, you know fn. But from fn through this function, you can recover the accuracy. So, in other ways, the fn is not a good approximation to f, but it contains enough information so you can get exponentially accurate approximation to f in regions that, where f is analytic or smooth. So that's the end of the story of the Gibbs phenomena. It's not something real. It's just a matter of representation. You can get, even for non-smooth function, you can get by Fourier approximation, you can get exponentially good results. Now, how do you find the phi k? And I'll give you examples. Turns out that if you take instead for phi k, you take the Gegenbauer polynomial ck lambda, then this ck lambda are complementary, Gibbs complementary, for Fourier, Chebyshev, or Legendre. I don't know if this is the best one. Certainly it's not the only one, but it is one. And the proof is pretty technical, and I'll omit it. Yeah, I should omit it. Okay, let me show you two applications of that. Turns out that digital cameras that are from that takes pictures of Earth from satellites take Fourier coefficients. They take pictures, they take some part, and they take a picture of this part, and then they go, they take the part, it's splice. Of course, these things are not periodic. So if you do Fourier, you have a Gibbs phenomena. Oh, that's... Let me just... For the same... So... That's you get when you splice pictures. And here the Gibbs. The people were not very concerned about oscillations, but they were concerned that you can hide, don't see. If you do the Gegenbauer, you get almost perfect thing, or at least in the I norm, it's perfect. this is lambda equal to 3, m equal to 7, and you have 20 points. And you recover, if you look very carefully, you'd still see some things, but it's not on the same order. Okay, the other, here is another picture. Well, you cannot take it very large because of two things. First of all, the theory limits it. But secondly, the Gegenbauer are not very susceptible to roundoff errors. So we have to balance things. What works. Basically what works, yes. There is a lot of art here still. It's a good question. It's a good question. The other application that I want to show you is the computer tomography. I'll do the theory very fast. Basically, when you take a CAT scan, and what you get from the CAT scan, the results, you want to identify some density function. Say you have some tissue that you put there, and you want the density of this tissue. You don't measure the FXY. What you measure is the Radon transform, which is the integral of FXY against the delta function of X cosine theta plus Y sine theta minus R. And the problem is to recover F from P. They have what they call the slice theorem that said that if you take the Fourier transform of P in R, the R Fourier transform, call it P hat, of rho, this is now the Fourier transform variable in theta. This equals to the Fourier transform for the two-dimensional Fourier transform of F. So it's F hat of rho cosine theta and rho sine theta. So this suggests a method that looks very simple. It's not as simple as it looks, but it is you take P, you go to P hat. That you do by fast Fourier transforms, which is fast. Now you get F hat. You need to do some interpolations here, and this is a problem, but let's skip that. From F hat, you go back to F by inverse fast Fourier transforms. So it's P to P hat to F hat to P to F, and that's very nice because it's very, very fast. The problem is that the function F is not periodic. Non-periodic is like non-smooth function. And you see that if you apply this method, this is what is called the Shep-Logan phantom. And if you do this method, with this is 128 modes, there are things here that are missing. If you look for a tumor in the brain, you miss that. You take 512 points, you see you get some better things and some more, but still what you see here is the gips. The white and black are the gips. When you clean it, you get that. So you get the picture. Everything was hidden by the gips phenomena here. Okay, this is on the level of approximation theory.
Do you have to communicate with a special filter? I mean, you can't just do any sort of filter pass?
Yeah. If you don't do that by the Gegenbauer, you can clean thing, but you miss these things. Okay? You can smooth things, but then you miss data here. So you have to be careful how you do that. Okay, I'll talk about linear hyperbolic equations. Let me skip the stability things. And the question is, it's very nice on the approximation level, but now I'm solving differential equations. Do I have the same thing? And I have arguments on that all the times. Because people say, wait, you lose the information. It's just first order information that you start the calculation with. It propagates all around. So even if initially you can recover thing, but the error propagates. So how can you manage that? So I cannot prove it for the nonlinear case, but there is a very nice theory for the linear hyperbolic equations. And let me present it very fast again, but the idea is unfortunately not mine. Eitan Tadmor and myself adopted an idea from a paper of Mack and Lax that did it for finite difference schemes. Absolutely beautiful paper. It's, but we took the main idea over there and we transferred it to spectral methods, and it worked very nicely. Consider hyperbolic system of the form dudt equal to an operator LU here. LU is an hyperbolic operator, and we are given an initial condition U0. An example is the symmetric hyperbolic system in D dimensions. So you have here symmetric matrices AI multiply DU to DXI. Now, suppose that you approximate it by the Galerkin procedure. Say, based, I'll present it just the Fourier. It's true also for Chebyshev and Legendre. I'm sorry, I found here a mistake last night. You, in the Fourier-Galerkin approximation, you take an approximation small u, such that the u to the t minus lu is orthogonal to e to the ikx for any k between minus n and n, and the initial condition is the projection of the u0. Now, one can prove the theorem that u minus u, the analytic solution minus the numerical one, is bounded by the s derivative of the initial condition times 1 over n to the s minus 1, which is nice if u0 is very smooth. What do you do if u0 is not smooth? So this fails for non-smooth u. And turns out that one can prove a theorem that small u is not a good approximation to capital U. The numerical one is not a good approximation to capital U. But if you take the scalar product of that against any smooth function f, I'm sorry, phi, the difference is less than 1 over n to the s times the derivative of phi, not of u. So you have here some, in a weak sense, you have a high order convergence. And how do you prove it? The proof is very nice, so I'll bring it in three lines. You look at the adjoint problem, Vt equal to L star V. If the problem is hyperbolic, the adjoint is also well posed. With initial value, the initial value is this phi here. Now, you have the Green's identity that comes, you take the derivative d to dt of the scalar product of u of t and v of t minus t. So it's L u t times v minus u t times L star v. So this is zero. The L goes to the other side, and this is zero. So u t against any function phi is like u zero against the function vt. And vt is the solution where the initial condition is phi and the operator is L star. And you can show the same things for the Galerkin approximation. Small u, the Galerkin approximation times phi n, is the same as u0 times v times t. So if you go now, you know that since v approximates, small v approximates capital V, and this we know that it's less than k times phi to the s over n s to the minus 1. V is the solution of the adjoint problem with initial condition phi. So this is the standard estimate. So you realize that, let's keep that, you realize that UT minus U, the analytic one minus U against phi, is like the initial U0 times VT minus VT. This is very small because of the first line. So therefore, the weak form UT, the analytic one minus the Galerkin one, which is not small, but if you take the scalar product against any smooth function, then it is small. But this means that the Fourier coefficients, if you take instead of phi, you take e to the ikx, then you get that the Fourier coefficients of that are obtained with spectral accuracy. And that means that you can now, for capital U, or let me show the graph, this. Okay. Let me go on the second bullet. The Fourier coefficients of U approximate those of U with spectral accuracy. U does not approximate a capital U, but the first Fourier coefficients are done okay. It is therefore possible to post-process to get spectral accuracy. Or alternatively, define phi, which is this sum. These are the Gegenbauer filter. And you can show that U against phi is U at the point psi. And you can do that at any psi in which capital U is, this should be capital U here, in which capital U is smooth. And by this elegant argument, one can show that if you solve a linear hyperbolic equation with discontinuous solutions, you can still recover the accuracy at every point of continuity. I suspected that I won't have time for the nonlinear case, and let me skip it. Let me show you the problems that we did. The first problem is the LeBlanc problem, and this we just did to show that you can handle very tough shocks. This problem was given for us for some lab in DOE, and they have extremely strong shocks. You can imagine from what. And they want to see instabilities that comes from these shocks. So these are the Euler equations. We solved the Euler equations, the usual one, one-dimensional one. What's so important about this problem, the important part here is the initial conditions. I have your log scales. So rho, I start with a jump at x equal to 0. Rho at the right side, or the left side rather, is 2. On the right side is 10 to the minus 3, almost 0. And this causes problems for every code that has to do to simulate the shock wave. The moment that you have here overshoot, you get negative density and the code blows. U is 0. P looks okay here because this is a log scale. P jumps from 10 to the 9 to 1. So it's extremely... Now, what we do now for any problem that we do with more than one numerical method. The other numerical method that we do is the weighted INO scheme. So our algorithm was the following. We use multi-domain Chebyshev collocation method. I did not talk about multi-domain, but modern spectral codes are all multi-domain. We do the differentiation and smoothing using the pseudo-PEC. We use the ninth order exponential filter. I did not explain to why do you need it, but I had to skip the detail of the stability. We had the Riemann solver at the interfaces, and we used the post-processing techniques. The other one was a weighted INO by Chi-Wang Shu, fifth order finite difference scheme. In time, we marched with the third order TVD Ranga-Kata schemes. This is our working horse. And the spectral calculation, I have to say this was not obtained by Weiss and Dan, and I have to say they are spectacular, really spectacular. You have here an overshoot, if you want to, but there is no other code that can do as good as that. For example, the INO code, which performs also admirable, you have your different resolutions, and you see that you really need very high resolution to get to the analytic one, which is red. You see here also. And this is very good results for these particular problems. So spectral method can handle very strong shocks. Why? I would not use spectral method for strong shocks, but they can do that. The next problem that I want to report of is a problem that for that you really need spectral methods. For this problem, we simulate the 2D Navier-Stokes equation. But we have also its reactive flow, we have chemistry. So we have here the usual fluxes, the Euler fluxes, we have the Navier-Stokes fluxes, but we have also chemical sources. The vector U has the usual fluid mechanical variables, velocities and pressures, but also concentrations. The chemical reaction here is quite a simple one, but it adds four more species, and basically you have a hydrogen and water, hydrogen and oxygen, and becomes water. Okay, what was the problem that we addressed? In a supersonic airplane, the air is not enough time in the combustion chamber to get combustion. This is one of the problems. So one idea was to use the shock wave that is over there and to get it through an hydrogen jet in order to induce a faster mixing. So what we are interested here is not really in the shock. The shock goes from left, it passes the hydrogen jet, it will break it. And the question is, what is happening within these pieces of the hydrogen jet? So you have there many scales, and you really want to resolve those scales. And okay, I just want to show you two of the runs. This was the hydrogen jet breaks into two. No, I don't want to. Sorry, is it the wrong? Okay, let's do that by order. This is what the third order Eno scheme with a grid of 240, 120. This is the upper part of the hydrogen jet that broke. The red denotes where are the water. This is the hydrogen. Where is the most of the hydrogen? And it doesn't show too much mixing. However, the Chebyshev shows totally different results. Now, the outer shape looks around almost the same, but it shows much more mixing here than the Eno scheme. So how do you decide which one is right? You increase the number of points. And when you increase the number of points enough, this is a grid of 1472 to 736, you start to get, we did not draw this because we did not want the printer to work too hard. But this part, you get exactly the same as the spectral one. So if you converge with the Eno scheme, you do get the results of the spectrum.
Do you have the same size of grid, or is it less?
No, the spectral is less than one half in each direction. And I won't show other pictures, but let me just jump to the four, to the this problem, and maybe. Okay, the other problem, again, we did it or are doing it for the American Air Force. You want flame holders, again in a combustion chamber of a supersonic airplane. So you want a mechanism to hold the flame over there. How do you hold flame over there? If you have the usual flame holders, they interact with the flow and they can cause some problems. So recess cavities are some way of building, or cavities are ways of building flame holders. Let me just don't go over that. I feel the pressure of time. Okay, this is the numerical multi-domain thing. Here is the cavity. Okay, this is the lower one. A flow is coming here. You have interactions, you have flame. And you hope that the flame will, because of the cavity structure, will be here at the cavity and will feed the flame that goes out. So you will sustain here some very hot flow that will burn and send flame to the chamber. It's very hard to do these calculations, and people are doing basically numerical studies mostly with cold flows, not reactive flows. The problem is that if you look at this cavity, you cannot get the flow here to be steady state. There are pressure oscillations at every place. There are vortices that are moving inside. We don't want flame to move inside. And the question what to do, and one of the way that people suggest is to take this in an angle. And hopefully this will cause the flow to be steady here. And numerical calculations indeed, using finite difference schemes on cold flow, indeed show that with 30 degrees, you do have steady state. And I want to show you results. These are results of 90 degrees, and you see here that you have pressure oscillations. And if you look closer at the beginning, you have, it's quite noticeable, pressure oscillations. However, if you do 30 degrees, and this is the pressure, it starts at the beginning, you have some oscillations, but then it's steady state. And these results are false because this is a low order scheme. It turns out that if you have a low order scheme, you have numerical dissipation. It acts like physical dissipation, so it lowers the Reynolds number, and everything goes to steady state. This is the wrong thing. This is a problem with shockwave. The Mach number here is around 2. And if you do the spectral calculation, the 90 degrees is the blue one, and the 30 degrees is the red one, and you have pressure oscillations, you never have steady state. Except the 30 degrees, you have attenuation of the pressure waves. So that's what's happening here. But turns out, moreover, that one should not worry about cold flows, because for reactive flows, you have still pressure oscillations, but they are much smaller. For 90 degrees, that these are this one, and for 30 degrees, you have still oscillations, but they are very benign. They are not fast oscillations. So cold flow is not a good model for the reactive flow. The problem that we are running right now is the real problem, that hydrogen is injected from this part. And this is the initial density, I think. Yeah, the initial density of the problem. And you can compare between 90 degrees and 30 degrees. Okay, the product of the combustion is water. So whenever you see water, and this is the yellow one, it shows you where the flame is. And you see that the flame is contained here, and it's in the cavity. So you have a flame that goes out, but it's nicely contained, which is ideal for the flame holder. And you do not have it in the 90 degrees. The 90 degrees, you have this wild thing here. Okay. I think I'll save you the Richtmeier Meshkov instabilities, but I just want to give you one picture over there to illustrate. The Richtmeier Meshkov instability is if you have a shock wave passing through an interface between two different gases, xenon and argon. This is Mach number of 4.46, and this is because the DOE lab had some results from some Russians about this one. I don't know how much we can count on that. So what the shock wave does, it triggers instability on this interface, and it's important to know how the interface develops. And what you have four interesting phenomena happening here. You have here, the shock is already here. You have a reflected shock here that was reflected from the interface. You have a penetration of the heavy gas to the lower gas. It's called a spike. And you see the roll-up here. Here you have the other phenomena, the light gas into the heavy one. Now, you have here something totally unexpected, and you do not get it in low order schemes, and this is a small jet and some vertical structure over here. Here you have some triple point of the shock wave. So it's really a complicated problem, and I want to show you just comparison between the WINO, the weighted INO scheme, and the spectral one. And I save you a long time high Mach number. Yeah, this one I want to show you. This is the same resolution. We push the computer to whatever we could do that. So the spectral is 1024 and 256 here. The WINO is 1024 and 512. This is before the post-processing of the spectral. So you see some oscillations, but really not much. This is the density. I just want to point out that you have here much more roll-up than you have in the WINO scheme. It means that the small scales are obtained much better with the spectral, though the WINO itself is a high-order scheme. If you have low-order scheme, you lose this roll-up completely. You'd have more of that at the spectral code. So what is my conclusion? The conclusion is the following. Spectral methods can handle discontinuities. Don't do that for any problem with discontinuities. If you can get by without spectral methods, it's probably cheaper, not cheaper, but less programming without that. But if you have shock waves and you have small scales that you want to resolve, you have to go to a high-order scheme. We show that the Gibbs phenomena, the one that's being argued all the time, that it is really stumbling block to spectral method, is not real. It's just a way of looking at the result in the wrong way. If you do have the Fourier coefficients of non-smooth function, there is a way to get from them the right information at every point of continuity. We saw that when we solve linear differential equations, we still retain high-order information in the solution, and you can post-process it. We did not cover the nonlinear equations, but we show in the nonlinear equations, one can show that spectral method converge to the right entropy solution. And then I showed you very non-trivial results of problems that contain not only shock waves, but very small-scale phenomena where the scales are important. And I think that I convinced you the spectral method can do that and can do that very nicely. Again, thank you for inviting me here. It was a fascinating day for me. And whenever I come, I speak, but I also learn, and I learned a lot today about many things, and thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any questions? David, comments? Michael.
In going ahead, and so the picture I get is, either there's shock waves, what have you, if you want to capture a small scale that's away from the shock wave, the spectral methods are good.
Yeah.
But the question then is, do I need to know, when you're doing this processing with the Eigenbauer, all these polynomials, do I need to know, let's say, for nonlinear problems, where the shock is at some time?
Yes.
So I need to actually...
Yes, and I did not talk about that, not at each time. Don't process it each time. It's a waste. Just post-process when you want to look at the results. But not at every time step.
Okay, so it's not like the error will continue on. And
no, that's exactly the proof with the linear equations, right? You go with the usual spectral method, and at each time that you want to, you can post-process.
Right.
But you don't do that actively.
Okay. Does that also sort of qualitatively seem to work for the nonlinear?
Yes,
problems?
Yeah. That's what we see. Yeah, we don't have theory for that, but it seems to work this way. So it seems that we do capture the small scales.
Yeah. Do you see any for parabolic problems?
Well, now I need some education, because my education is that when you have parabolic equation, even if you start with discontinuous solution, you get smoothest solution. But what you can prove in the same way, that by building the adjoint operator, you can prove that high order information is there when you solve in the linear equations. And again, I don't know for nonlinear ones. So, most of the calculations are Navier-Stokes with reactive elements over there. So it has also parabolic terms in that.
Any other questions?
Do you suggest we rewrite the textbooks now and say that
yes.
You know, when you read a textbook, it says spectral methods, high accuracy, smooth solution?
Yeah, since I could not convince people to do that, I'm writing my own textbook now. So it will be written in the right way, I think.
Well, we really appreciate you coming, really. We know how busy you are. And I certainly have enjoyed your visit, and I'm sure a lot of other people and some of the people you spoke to, and I'm sure the audience